in contemporary fine crafts such as paintings, photography, jewelry, pottery, wood, fiber, and more. Wind, Water, and Light, far from the ordinary, at 10 Main Street in downtown Champaign.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Last month, stock in the internet search service Google closed above $400 for the first time. Since Google went public just about 15 months ago, the value of the stock has gone up by more than 300%. And this enormous success that Google has had has prompted people to ask two kinds of questions. One, only partly tongue-in-cheek, how long will it be before Google takes over the world? And the other, how long will it be before Google crashes when somebody else comes along with a different kind of idea, a competing service, and knocks them off the wall? Well, this morning we'll try to talk a little bit about those two questions and also look at how it is that how and why Google has been such a success. And our guest for the program is David Weiss. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the Washington Post. He is the author of three books and the co-author of a recently published book, which is titled The Google Story. The subtitle is Inside the Hottest Business, Media, and Technology Success of Our Time. The book is published by Delacorte Press and is out in the bookstores now if you would like to read it. Here on the program, as always, questions are welcome. If you'd like to call in, you can do that. The only thing we ask of callers into the program is just that people try to be brief so that we can keep moving and get in as many as possible, but you're welcome to call. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So, again, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Those are the numbers. Mr. Weiss, hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
I'm doing great, thanks. Go Illini.
Well, we got off to a pretty good start here. I guess we'll just have to see. We can get back to where we were last spring. That would be an achievement.
Underestimate the Fighting Illini.
But that's another subject. Let me just ask you, we can talk in some depth here, but to reflect a little bit on those two questions that I know are the two that people ask so often. And maybe I'll take the second one first, and that is, can Google sustain this level of growth?
Google's top management, CEO Eric Schmidt, co-founders Sergey Brin and Larry Page, believe that the rate of growth of the company will slow due to the law of large numbers. At a certain point in time, while the company can continue to be successful, it's unlikely to grow at the stratospheric rate that it's been growing. Since 1998, this is a company that has gone from an idea to $120 billion in stock market value. That's more than the combined value of the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Disney, Amazon combined. And you can even add at least one more good-sized company in there. And so, you know, to create $120 billion in market value, to be in more than 100 languages around the world, to dominate a sector in this way has led to stratospheric growth. They're hiring 10 people a day right now. They're really moving, but they believe at some point the growth rate will slow.
The other question, and as I said, I think people ask it only partly joking, is how long will it be before Google takes over the world? That's a little bit big and a little bit of an overstatement, but they have expanded the number of services they offer. Now, recently, there's been a lot of press about this idea of putting books online, putting virtually everything there is in print online. And the two guys, when they talk, when they engage their imagination, think about what they would do in the future. It sounds a little scary. In fact, how big do you think it can get, and how dominant in the world of information providing do you think that Google can be?
Well, I think you have to start with the company's stated mission. It's to organize all of the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful to people. And by all of the world's information, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, the co-founders, don't just mean the information on the internet today. That means, as you said, they want to digitize and include the library collections from Harvard, Stanford, Michigan, Oxford, and the New York Public Library. They want to add video. They want to be people to be able to search telephone calls. They want to expand search and online information to include the majority of the world's information, which, of course, is not on the internet. And that goes all the way to one of the things that I found most surprising when reporting and writing the Google story, and that is that Sergey Brin is passionate about the intersection of technology, genetics, and biology, which is to say that their ambition goes all the way toward the information inside our bodies. And there's a chapter in the book called Googling Your Genes. And so they even want to get into the whole field of science and medicine and genetics.
Just maybe we should not take for granted that everyone listening knows what it is we're talking about.
All right, want to start at a basic.
Let's be real basic for people.
Sure.
Who would say, what is Google?
Google is a way for computer users to find information rapidly about any subject they're interested in by going to a website called google.com. And typing in a few words that express it, in a fraction of a second, Google will give you thousands of search results. People are mystified and amazed. Some say any great technology is indistinguishable from magic. And Google seems to have that quality because it gives you search results in less than 1 second. It was the brainchild of two guys who met at Stanford in 1995. They had no ambition to go out and create a company whatsoever. They were frustrated because they were using the internet and using computers, and they couldn't get decent search results. The best search engine out there in those days was something called Alta Vista, and it did a good job of crawling the internet, but it did a poor job of ranking results in terms of relevancy. So their big breakthrough was one day Larry Page said to a professor at Stanford, "I'm going to download the internet because I think I can come up with a better way to make search results relevant." And his professors laughed at him in the way that it was the kind of ambitious idea that only a student can come up with. "I'm going to download the internet." They said impossible. He did it. They came up with a system that ranks search results based on relevancy so that when you get results, they have something to do with what it is you're really interested in most of the time. And from there, it's really interesting. Brin and Page did not want to leave Stanford. They wanted to stay and pursue their PhDs. And so in 1997, 1998, Stanford, on their behalf, which had patented the technology they came up with, tried to help them sell their idea to Yahoo, another technology company. They tried to sell it to Digital Equipment Corp and Alta Vista. They tried to sell it to venture capitalists. Nobody would give them a dime for their idea, because they said internet search is a commodity. There's nothing special about what you're doing. It's not worth anything. Today it's worth $120 billion, and it was finally one of the co-founders of Yahoo who said to them, "Look, nobody's going to pay you for this idea. If you guys really believe in it, you're going to have to leave Stanford, go out and try your idea on your own and see if you can make it happen."
Yeah. One of the things we know about the way that people use search engines, a couple of things, is that when they put the terms for their search in, they cast their net extremely wide. And when the results come back, most people don't go very far down the list.
Most people only go to the first page of results, and if you're beyond the second page, you may as well be invisible, because almost nobody goes beyond the second page of results.
So that means that for both the person who is doing the search and for people who have websites, the critical question is how close to the top can you get? And it seems that what the Google guys did that was different from the way other search engines operated was they were more interested in people and what they thought provided the information that they wanted, rather than they seemed to be more oriented towards the searcher.
They were totally
the websites that were providing information.
Laser-like focus on the computer user.
Yeah.
Well, because they were pleasing themselves. They wanted to get the best search results possible. And so they had a laser-like focus on giving you the most relevant result. But having said that, Larry Page, who came up with the mathematical formulas that to this day are used to make the Google search engine run, believes that the quality of search on Google today, as big as it is, as dominant as you describe it and all the rest, is only about a 2 or 3 on a scale of 1 to 10. He believes that the quality of search results have a long way to go. And according to Larry Page, and he says the ultimate search engine would understand exactly what you mean and give back exactly what you want. And he feels they're a long way from that. You type in the word Apple right now, it doesn't know if you're referring to the fruit or Apple computer.
Yeah, so when you say quality of search, or when they take they use that term quality of search, what they're talking about is how well we are doing at providing the information, the specific information that person wants.
Precisely.
We have a couple of callers here. Why don't we go ahead and bring them into the conversation?
Fantastic.
Starting with someone listening this morning in Indiana on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. This is beginning to sound like Hollywood in the sense that when a film comes out, there's a lot of people involved in it, you know, who should get a handshake besides an Oscar. The formulas that they use to get into other websites I find interesting. If you talk about that somewhat, not in a sense what the formula actually is how is it that those people who, in a sense, own that data allowed, if they did, for it to be procured by these guys?
Good question.
To make money. And that's, well, okay, that's a good one. I'll just let it sit right there because...
That's a great
I've been concerned about that when I first heard about Google.
It's a great question.
There's a lot of dummies out there, that's for sure.
Well, all right, so you have all these websites out there.
Hand it over. Here it is, guys.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. Yeah.
Thanks. Great question.
Go ahead, Dave.
You have all these websites out there, and you have no way of really organizing that information. And people who have websites have the ability, if they want to block their information from being crawled by an internet search engine. Google sends out something known as a spider, an electronic canvas of internet sites. And because it helps people and computer users particularly find the information on their website, most websites are happy to be included in the Google index. So their concern is not that Google is crawling and taking a snapshot of what it is they have on their website and including it. Their concern is that they would be left out of the index. There are websites that are left out of the index. For example, the Wall Street Journal has a website that you have to pay money to subscribe to. Google does not crawl that website. And so the Google guys basically came up with and did the same thing that others were doing. They canvassed the web using a spider. And I would add one other thing. You know, people think when they do a Google search and they get those rapid results that Google is actually searching the entire internet. It's not. Google has previously copied, downloaded, and indexed and organized its most recent copy of what's available online. And the reason you get the search results so quickly is that the terms that you type in a Google search are being matched up against something that is really a copy of the internet and that has been organized in advance. And you also get those search results rapidly because Google has, according to the company's board member and president of Stanford University, John Hennessy, what is the most powerful computing network in the world today. And one of the really striking things for me in researching the Google story, because I had no idea about this, is that you think about Google, the search engine, and you think about software. You think about how it works. It turns out that a big competitive advantage that enables search results to come back so quickly is the fact that they have hundreds of thousands of these garden variety personal computers linked together with special software in data centers all over the world. And so Google is very reliable. Why? Because it gives you the results from the data center that is physically the closest to where you live, and if for some reason there's a technical glitch, it's immediately routed to another one. So these guys have built up a competitive advantage because they're both in the hardware and the software business. And in the Google story, we coined a new term. It's called Googleware. It's that optimal blending of hardware and software that makes the Google search engine run.
One other quick question, and then I have several other callers I want to get to. When I or when anybody uses Google, you go to the Google site, you put in your request, you get back your results, then you go on. They don't charge you anything.
That's right.
How do they make money?
It's just like the television networks of old. You know, you watched NBC, ABC, or CBS, the programming was free. So the search engine is free. The television networks make their money on advertising. So does Google. Only Google came up with a way to do advertising that was unique. Instead of putting ads in your face or mass advertising, Google came up with a way to have what are called contextually relevant ads, and they are in small square boxes to the right of Google search results, and they may appear also in a line or two above the free search results. Those ads, it's really up to the computer user whether or not you want to avail yourself of that advertising. If you click on those ads, the cyber cash register rings at Google, and Google gets a certain amount of money per click. And advertisers only have to pay when someone actually clicks on one of their ads. That's one of the reasons why so much advertising is moving from television and radio and newspapers onto Google and the Internet. Because right now, there's an old saying in advertising that people spend an enormous amount of money to advertise, and they know that half of the money is wasted, but they don't know which half. When you advertise on TV or in a major daily newspaper, a lot of your ads get overlooked. Here, the advertiser only pays when someone clicks on the ads. And typically, each of those clicks brings Google 50 cents, $1.50, something like that. So we're talking about billions and billions and billions of clicks on ads that are related to your search results that all somehow add up to the billions of dollars that have made Google such a financial success.
We have callers. We'll get right to. Just let me quickly introduce again the guest for anyone who has tuned in here recently. We're talking with David Weiss. He's a reporter for The Washington Post and is the co-author of the book The Google Story, about the history of that company and that search engine. It's published by Delacorte Press. Next up, we'll talk with someone here in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I thought you... people might be interested in a couple of the local connections of Google here to Champaign-Urbana. One of them being that Sergey Brin was actually an intern at Wolfram Research, a local Champaign software company, in the early 1990s, when he worked on our Mathematica product before, you know, going on to greater things. And the other is that you were just mentioning the Google AdWords. The bidding algorithm that's used to determine the placement of those ads was also developed. It was developed by an economist who was using Mathematica as the mathematical modeling language to develop that algorithm.
Did you know Sergey Brin when he was at Wolfram Research?
Well, you know, so I was there. I mean, I'm one of the founders of that company, and I cannot believe that I actually don't remember him at all. But other people do, and, you know, I've met him a couple times since then, and I kick myself, you know, regularly for not realizing what we had there.
Did you buy the stock?
No, I did not buy the stock, mm-hmm. Which is another thing that, you know, life is full of such things.
And do you consider Sergey Brin to be someone who's a brilliant or really bright mathematician and engineer, or someone who is a technology visionary? Or both?
I would think some of both. I mean, you know, he did good work for the summer he was here with us. I mean, he's obviously a very smart guy, and he's fallen in with a very good crowd, I think, as well. It's not just one person that makes it.
No, and in fact, you're right. In fact, while people think about Sergey Brin and Larry Page, two young co-founders of Google, in fact, part of the Google story is how they actually developed what they did. They had a lot of help from Stanford University professors, and they got a lot of resources from Stanford that helped to support the effort as well.
Right, and they've also now gotten themselves in a position where they can hire, you know, the very best, because everybody wants to work at Google because it's such a, you know, interesting place.
Well, they've put together a workplace, they call it the Googleplex, out in Silicon Valley, which has attracted, as you say, the brightest minds in technology today, or many of them, and they also do everything possible. They run the workplace differently than other companies so that people can focus on the ideas and creativity and the things that really matter to them. You know, they feed people 3 free meals a day. They have on-site medical. They have on-site dental. They have washing machines and dryers, including for those engineers, which they love, a timer they can take back to their desk so that they know when the clothes are done in the washing machine, and they don't have to leave it sitting there or wonder, and they know when it's time to put it in the dryer. And so, you know, there's foosball tables, there's beach volleyball. Pretty soon they're going to build a campus in partnership with NASA that is going to not only give people everything they need to stay there and work 16 hours a day happily, but they're going to provide them with housing too. And it's kind of back to the future. It's a throwback to another age in a way. But, you know, what they've discovered is that if you take away all the impediments and you give people what they call 20% time, 1 day a week to work on anything they want to, you get really bright people doing really creative things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, I'd like to think he learned some of those ideas during his time at Wolfram Research, although we can't take it quite the same level they do.
Wolfram Research is one of the things that Sergey still talks about and has on his resume.
Yeah, we always think that's a little amusing. See, you know, oh, let's see, worked at Wolfram, created Google. You know, it's nice to see those things on the same page.
Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go and talk again here with someone locally in Champaign-Urbana. This would be line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Discuss the topic mentioned earlier a bit, like phone numbers and medical data. How would that appear and how would one use it? Like now there's a book search service and you type in the title and they give you a review, but they also have a few what they call statistically rare word combinations or phrases, and someone must sit down and pick those out. But if you were interested in like nutrition or diets and Hollywood stars, could you type in a name and then get selections from biographies, not the whole book title or review, but just a few pages that mentioned a diet?
Is the question clear?
I think so.
Yeah.
They're working on that now. And when Larry Page says they've got a long way to go, I think part of it is that he wants people to be able to get as much or as little information as they're looking for. So they're working on ways to improve search so that you can get just the information that you want and not have to wade through other material. So I think, you know, the other thing that's happening is that the book publishers, spurred by Google's efforts to put millions and millions of books online and make them searchable, to literally, as Larry Page says, it tear down the walls of libraries and make all that knowledge available to experts and others alike, you know, they are moving toward a time when people can buy pages of books. So, for example, Random House right now is working on something where people who want a recipe would be able to buy just those pages in a cookbook online that have that recipe.
Let's go again. The next caller here is on line number 3 in Urbana. Hello.
Howdy. Mm-hmm. I was writing an article yesterday about Verizon giving up their pension plan, and I remembered that Doonesbury had said a cute thing about that in their title, something about the pension fund just laying there. So I did a Google search on that, and I related that to what you said about that they were so much better than everybody else because they stacked their things for relevance. And the first 2 hits I got were ads to buy Doonesbury books, and not just the pension fund was just sitting there. The first 2, these aren't off the side. They're ads from Amazon that are the first 2 hits. And for some reason, this turned out to be the longest search. It took almost an entire second. I'm not sure why it took that long.
Well, Larry Page thinks they've got a long way to go to make search better. When I said that they made search results more relevant and that was the big breakthrough, I was comparing them to what was available at the time they invented this in Alta Vista, which was the leading search engine in the mid-1990s when they came up with this idea. They were light years better than Alta Vista. Today we've gotten to a point where where we're so focused on getting what we want immediately, I call it instant gratification for the mind in the Google story, that when something takes a full second or isn't perfect, we think, wow, why aren't the results better? But imagine the conversation we're having now, fraction of a second versus a full second. It's everything's become so compressed.
Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not the point I'm trying to make. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. The point I was actually trying to make was that the first two hits were totally irrelevant to me.
Well, that goes to Larry Page's point.
They're ads.
Well, that goes to Larry Page's point.
This just started a year ago, didn't it?
Pardon me?
Google started putting ads as the first couple hits?
No, that's not something that just started a year ago. That's something that started quite some time ago.
Oh, I guess I've been lucky with my searches before now.
But, you know, what do you have right below those ads?
GlobeandMail.com, which I think is a newspaper that carries Doonesbury, and some article that was retracted by somebody I don't know named Mark Kleinman.
I mean, one of the things...
And another Doonesbury... they also quote Wiki a lot. I wonder if they have a deal with Wiki.
Yes, they do. The other thing I would say is that Google, you know, Google isn't perfect, and Google has a lot of things that it does. These guys are not Boy Scouts. You don't create $120 billion in stock market value by sheer technology alone. They are very aggressive business people.
Well, I'm a Boy Scout, and I would prefer that they didn't do it that way.
Well, originally they wrote a paper which said they never wanted to have any advertising because they didn't want to corrupt search results.
Well, they've done that now.
Well, no, let's be fair. They separate the ads from the search results.
This is not separated. It looks exactly...
However, let me just complete what I was saying, if you don't mind. However, they don't mark the ads as ads. They call them sponsored links.
It's not in a box. It's not off to the side.
No, there's two things at the top. I know exactly what you're talking about. I spoke at Google last week, and I said, you know, ultimately, as you grow larger and larger, there's going to be a tendency to not trust you because we don't like concentrations of power in this country that become too great. And the level of confidence you have with users, with politicians, with everyone is going to matter a great deal. And one of the things that's really, I think, somewhat misleading is that when they serve up these ads that look too much like search results at the top, and they call them sponsored links, people who aren't regular users like you don't even realize they're ads. And you know, what does the word sponsored link mean?
What should I be seeing?
Why doesn't Google call it an ad? Because if Google called those things ads, which they now label sponsored links, fewer people would click on them and they'd make less money. But I have to suggest to you that I think that in the long run, the more transparent and the more open this company is, the more likely it is to avoid running afoul legally and in terms of government regulation and in public scrutiny of all kinds of problems, because there are issues that relate to trust. And I mean one of the major topics in the Google story is privacy. I mean, right now Google saves every internet search that you do or I do. Google knows a lot more about you than you know about Google or than I know about Google. And that's part of the reason why I wrote the book. I want people to be aware that all of their internet searches are being saved indefinitely, even things you delete if you use Google's email service, Gmail. All of those are being saved too. And so, you know, if under the Patriot Act, a federal government investigator wants to go and look at those records, Google is obliged to comply with law enforcement and may not even be allowed to tell the user that this has happened. So, I mean, there are enormous privacy issues that are raised here and that are raised in the book I think are relevant. And so this is a company, and it's a business. It's not a pure academic play, and that's part of the reason you're seeing those ads. And the privacy issues are likely to grow, especially because it's possible that civil litigation may come up, and someday, who knows, we may have a divorce lawyer seeking with a subpoena to get access to somebody's emails and search results from the Google database, which is permanent. in order to gain an upper hand in a divorce trial. And I don't think people are aware of this.
Yeah, caller, I don't know if we, you're still, I don't know, have we answered your question?
Well, you said there was supposed to be some way for me to tell this was a sponsored link. And I've been looking at this while you've been talking, and I don't see any indication that this is not...
It's not in a different color than what's below it?
I don't have color.
It's not, there's not a line between the first two results and what's below it?
No. I've got web results 1 through 10, and then it says Amazon.com, but the pension fund was just sitting there, and then it goes right down to where it says cashed in similar places, all exactly the same as every other hit. And then the next one is for another book... What is it, Tink? Is Pan in Trouble, another Doonesbury book?
Now,
there is a little thing in brackets that says more results from www.amazon.com, but I don't see that as being, there's no dotted line.
And when you look to the right of the page, does it say sponsored links?
I'm going to do a search here for sponsored link here.
No, I don't mean that. When you search for what it is,
the words are on there.
Pardon me?
The words are on my page.
It says sponsored link.
Let's see here. I'm just going to do the word sponsor. No, that word is not on the page anywhere. I can try a different browser.
You're getting a result that's atypical of the normal Google search result.
Well, that's what I'm complaining about.
And I think you have a right to complain and a right to be unhappy about that, because one of the ways Google tries to distinguish itself from Yahoo is by clearly, they say, delineating the ads from the search results. Yahoo does not delineate them quite as clearly, and in fact, Yahoo will accept payments from websites in order to ensure that they're included in a crawl of the internet.
Now, does Wiki do that?
Google does not do that.
What kind of deal? You said they had a deal with Wiki. What kind of deal is it?
That's a both Google and Yahoo, the two leading search engines, rely on Wikipedia. It's not a financial deal. It's a deal that enables them to get data rapidly from that source.
But I find Wiki is too high on the list of results. I have a feeling they stack the results.
You know what? You're using a loaded term called stack the results. There's no such thing as a purely objective search result.
They're in the top 10 of almost every search I do nowadays.
Right, but you know what? The search results are based on the most... I mean, let's go back to the beginning of the conversation, okay? How does Google rank search results? They rank them based on relevancy. Well, what does relevancy mean to the searcher? It means you want the best results possible, right, to answer your question. You don't want to see ads. You don't want to see garbage. You want to see answers to your questions. And... Google developed a way of ranking search results that was based on the popularity of websites. So the more pointers, let's call them, that there are on the Internet, the more links that there are, the more backlinks that there are, a very technical term. I hate to use it, but I will in this case. The higher things show up in Google search results. So... what it essentially means is Google is relying to some extent on the wisdom of crowds in its search results. If people use something heavily and refer to it heavily, it has more credibility than if it's obscure. I'm not telling you that that's a good way of doing it or a bad way of doing it. I'm telling you that's the Google way of doing it.
I must jump in here. I hope the caller forgive me, but my lines are full and I've got about 20 minutes left and I want to get on to some other callers. Our guest, by the way, is David Weiss. He's a reporter for the Washington Post, is the co-author of a new book entitled The Google Story. It's published by Delacorte Press. And just for grins here, I and the computer here in front of me went on to Google and typed in a search, and I just put in the words used cars. And here I have the first 10 results of about 2.5 million. And the first two things at the top of the page are indeed sponsored links, and it says that. There are two, and they're in a box that's a different color. So it clearly says on the corner sponsored links. And then here are some of the run down the side, and also right at the top of that column, it also says sponsored links. So it seems to me that that says pretty clearly what those things are. And of course, the rest of they're all people who are trying to sell something. So it seems kind of pretty clear to me.
I think the caller's experience is an aberration.
All right. Well, let's go on to some other callers here and go to next Kankakee, line 4. Hello.
Morning. Your caller has been a user of the Google search engine since its introduction and has become an expert in Google. He was also wish to hear the guest speak about the variety of Google services besides the search engine, particularly Gmail, and address the question of why Big Blue Cloud doesn't seem to get identified as spam. Thank you.
Okay. Can you talk about that?
Other services besides just Google Search, the company has built an array of services. There is Gmail. Google offers for free an unlimited amount of storage of emails for any user. And one of the big advantages of Gmail is that it's incredibly easy to search and find any email. You can save all your emails forever if you want to, and you can search and find what you're looking for by typing in a keyword that would remind you of that. And the answers come up instantly. Google has developed something that's become quite popular called Google Maps and Google Earth. It's a way of literally looking at buildings, looking at places, looking at homes, getting directions, all those things in a way. It has a big, as Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal calls it, has a big wow factor. One of the really fun things to do is to go into something called Google Labs. And if you go to the Google homepage and you click on About Google, you can see all the new stuff that they're doing. And you can find out, what are the other things they're coming up with. You can find telephone numbers on Google. Google can even be your calculator. The first appendix in the Google story gives 23 Google search tips. You type any math problem into the Google search box, and it'll compute it. And you can use words or symbols. So you can write the words 2 plus 2, or you can write 12 divided by 3, or you can write 15 and use a percentage sign and say 15% of 6, and you will get an answer to your question. The search engine can also be used, if you have a bunch of food in the refrigerator and you're not sure what to whip it up into for something to eat, if you type those in and you start off with the word recipe colon, it will give you a list of recipes that would make use of whatever food you happen to have on hand.
What about the other question the caller was asking? And I guess I would say just generally, what do they try to do for the people who use their email to help with the spam problem?
I'm a Gmail user, and I've never received any spam on the service. And I think they have pretty strong filters to avoid spam. I think, though, in fairness, competitively, I think there's less spam out there than there used to be. Because as an industry, the technology industry has banded together to really try to block spam.
Okay, let's go to next caller. This would be Savoy and line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've been a user of Google for quite a long time, and I have to agree with the previous caller about the sponsored business. I know the difference between the sponsored links and the boxes on the right, but scattered conspicuously through the rest of the references are Amazon and eBay. And I've also noticed that recently searches are less efficient on Google than they were a couple of years ago.
What do you mean by less efficient?
Less directed at the target and more Amazon.com references.
I think it's a function of Amazon's popularity.
Okay. Well, but you would admit that that is a real phenomenon.
That is a real phenomenon. It's part of the reason why Larry Page says on a scale of 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
Google is only at about a 2 or a 3 in the quality of the search results it delivers. They got a long way to go.
Yes, but they have declined in efficiency since they went public.
Part of the reason is that I believe that part of the reason is that with increased internet usage and increased online shopping and commerce and increased activity on a handful of sites – like eBay and Amazon, they show up higher in search results.
Okay, but that
and
that,
well, let me just complete the thought, yeah, if you don't mind. If you look at the mega brands on the internet, eBay, Amazon, Google, Yahoo, AOL, there's only been one new mega brand created in the last 10 years, and that's Google. So these other sites that have been around a long time and that are quite popular are showing up more and more and higher in Google search results, in part because I think they crawl those sites very regularly and perhaps more regularly than they do the rest of the web. And I don't know that for a fact. I'm only guessing that that's the case. But, you know, I think part of the reason I wrote the Google story is because, a lot of people use Google, and it seems like it's clean, and it's simple, and it's whimsical, and it's fun. But I really wanted to close the gap between this sense of Google as some type of a strictly utilitarian, utopian, don't be evil way of getting information, and explain that, this is a business. And it's not to be seen as an academic exercise, and it's not to be seen as a not-for-profit. This is a company that has grown faster financially than any company in the history of American capitalism to its current size. That doesn't happen by accident.
Yes, I agree with you, and I find Google an almost irreplaceable asset. But I didn't want to let you imply that the previous caller's results were an aberration. And in fact, I find it to be a constant feature, and it mars the statement that they are gradually ascending to perfection. Because
When I said they were 2 or 3 out of 10, and that they're not there yet, I didn't mean to suggest that their goal is to get to 10, but they're a long way from there, and the people who know that best are the people who run that company. They're aware of your frustration, and they're trying to balance a lot of different things, but what they do isn't simple. On the other hand, it's good enough. It's probably the best thing out there today if you want to get rapid information quickly.
Yeah, and that's why I will not stop using Google.
Right. I mean, we're all addicted to it.
Yes, we are.
I mean, they have the biggest mind share of anything like it. And one of the interesting things is how global it is. That's true not only in the United States, but all over the world without much modification. This search engine has taken on, a 90% market share in Spain, a similar market share in France, heavily used throughout Asia. The book, The Google Story, not because of what I've done, but because of the company, is being published not only in the U.S., but in 15 foreign languages. That's because of the company's tremendous use in so many countries around the world and because of its ease of use in so many different languages.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is David Vikes. He's a reporter for The Washington Post. He is the co-author of a recent book entitled The Google Story, about the company and how it does what it does. It's published by Delacorte Press. We have another caller here to talk with in Urbana, line number 2.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Yes.
I sort of agree with a lot of the complainants, but the problem is it is a company, it is a business, they make money if they forget to not delineate advertising. And I would agree with also the latter use of the system is that there are more targeted, or let's say sponsored advertisers on the system. But that's sort of an idealization of the whole idea anyway, of all this information that can be collated and collected. But as for, you were talking about privacy earlier, there's an article in the Sunday New York Times entitled Spear Phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. And if anybody's interested in that, they should look that up on their New York Times website. But it's based on a worm that was developed by an Israeli programmer who basically got into all these British companies, and how they found out about it. It's a real interesting story. But I don't know. It's just real strange to me to hear everybody complaining about Google as if like it's not a company, as if it's like some idealized entity.
When you say that your motto is "Don't be evil," you invite a higher level of scrutiny.
General Motors says they make the most reliable cars too. I mean, that, you know,
but it's
a corporate advertising campaign.
You know, you're right, mm-hmm. but at the same time, yeah. they're able to attract the brightest minds in engineering.
Well, I'm glad they do, and I enjoy their stuff, but I still think they should have a way you can reverse the search, and that
right.
instead of looking at the top 10, how about look at the bottom 2,000? Because for one thing, always remember, everybody that calls you up says one thing: I was looking for something I remembered or I'd heard about. It's not that Google gives you anything that you don't already know.
Right,
that's the problem.
It's computer.
Yeah, and also I do copyrighted work, and I'm really, really not happy with their willingness to just put everything on the web. I mean, I know they want to respect copyrights and all that stuff. It'd be the equivalent of them taking your book and scanning it and giving it away free. I mean, they're going to have to figure out a way. The Internet has to figure out a way to remunerate people who make copyrighted material and reliably. And that's, I don't know, I just really, thank you very much.
Well, right, Google is currently the defendant in a lawsuit filed by a group of book publishers and authors because they're opposed to, you know, Larry, what Google is doing, and that is Larry Page wants to digitize and make searchable online millions and millions of books that are at Harvard, Stanford, University of Michigan, New York Public Library, and Oxford. And it has deals with all of these entities, and it's indemnified all of them legally. On one hand, you know, the lawsuits say exactly what you just said, and that is that, you know, Google is using other people's copyrighted material to profit, and that's not fair. That's not right. Larry Page's view is, I want to make all of the world's information available because most people can never travel to these libraries, and whether they're scholars or they're people who are living in rural areas around the world, if they have access to all of these books, it changes human knowledge and it fosters progress around the world for people to have access to the most information possible. So I actually think, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think this case will end up in the Supreme Court because we're really in an entirely new realm here.
We just have about 5 minutes left. I guess there's one thing that maybe we could stay with here a little bit at the end is this the privacy issue. One of the things that Sarah certainly wanted to bring up, and as you said, the issue here is that Google collects and keeps information on all of the users of the site about what they're looking at and where they're going. And the big question is, what sort of privacy protection do Google users have, and how is the company planning on addressing that?
Great question. I think the privacy issue and the privacy question is enormous. First of all, Google has become the repository today of more information about more people in one place than anywhere else. That means that an investigator can go to one spot, and that's the Googleplex, and say, I want to learn about this person or that person. I want to see their online searches. I want to see their Gmails. I want to see all of this stuff. Privacy advocates would tell you that we can talk from now until the end of time about privacy. If you have something that you really want to keep private, don't type it into a computer, because whether it's Google or any other entity, there is a trail when you type something in. Having said that, we all want to participate in the world and in progress and where it's going, so we're not going to stop using search engines to find information. But Google cannot protect you if it gets a lawful request from the government or a lawful request approved by a court for information about your online searches. And again, I've turned to privacy experts to say, what should users do? Their recommendation is that people use Google perhaps for search, but do their email somewhere else, so at least that's held in two different places. But it's a real issue, and privacy is a major, major concern that a lot of people have. Very valid concern. And, you know, even when you delete emails, Google saves them. Now, the flip side of all this is, why is Google saving all of this? Why do they do this? And the answer is because they want to improve the quality of search. The more they know about you, they believe, the more personalized your search results can become and the more precisely they can answer your question in serving up both the free search results and the sponsored links or ads. So, you know, there's a reason why they're collecting it from the standpoint of trying to improve search. There's also a risk for individuals that someone will abuse this at some point in time and that they are, you know, there recently was a criminal case in which a husband unfortunately murdered his wife after doing searches online to find out, you know, how to carry out a crime like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that information ended up assisting someone. You can't blame the provider of the information necessarily, but, you know, information can be used for good or evil, right? But law enforcement was actually able to track down that data from, I believe, Google, and with that, able to make a strong case against the perpetrator of the crime. So, you know, we're in a new realm here and in a new age, and I think that the Google story is in its infancy, and I think the privacy issues are as well.
We, I think, are going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry we have a caller we can't take, but we're just pretty much at the end of the time for this first hour. The book, if you would like to read it, is titled The Google Story, Inside the Hottest Business, Media, and Technology Success of Our Time. It is published by the Delacorte Press, and our guest, David Weiss, is the co-author. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The Washington Post. And, Mr. Weiss, thanks very much.
You're welcome. If your listeners have any more questions, I'm about 5 minutes to be online at WashingtonPost.com answering questions about Google for an hour. They could continue to listen to your program and be on their computers and send in any questions they have. They also can go to www.thegooglestory.com and have some fun taking something called the Google Labs Aptitude Test, which is a test of not only your mathematical ability and whether you might be a candidate to work at Google, but also has some kind of whimsical and fun things to do. And I want to thank you very much for having me on the program today.
Okay, again, thanks. Well, support for the show, Focus 580, comes from the Infant Parent Institute with offices in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information is available on the web at infantparent.com. The broadcast is also made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, featuring foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Party catering is also available. World Harvest Foods, located at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign. We're going to take a break, as we usually do. We'll have more Focus 580 in a bit. Right now, though, we'll have news and an update on the markets, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information